and welcome to another episode of Downtime with the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, in the branch librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
Hi, my name is Alex Groudens. My pronouns are she, they, and I am a cartoonist and illustrator. Recently, I came out with a book called Improv, How I Discovered Improv and Conquered Social Anxiety, which takes place actually in Wakefield, Rhode Island. So a very local story. And I don't know if there's like a lot of books out there, not only with Rhode Island involved, but also illustrated, because I live here. That's why it's in the book. But it was definitely something that makes a little bit different than other work I've seen lately.
I know. I remember getting excited in Dragon Hoops when Gene Lu and Yang mentioned St. Ray's. It wasn't even an integral part of the story. Like, he wasn't teaching at St. Ray's. He was teaching at a completely different private school. But like one of the kids from the basketball team, it's all about basketball, went to St. Ray's and transferred to that school. Like, he drew a little map and was like, that's where it is in Rhode Island. And I remember being very excited by that.
Yeah.
It
was a little like, state and gets a little mention. So.
I think it's a very Rhode Island thing to get excited when there's Rhode Island mentions in any form of media. And I'm like, oh, they mentioned us.
Yeah. I think it's like, you cling to that little representation.
We do exist. All right. But a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk more in depth about your book. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with what have you been reading?
I'm always reading a lot of manga these days. I feel like that's where I sort of started in middle school, because when I was a kid, I didn't read, I guess, quote unquote, comics, because in my head, comics were only like superhero stories and funny comics. I read a lot of Archie, but that was like, you know, a comic I could pick up at the grocery store while my mom was shopping. So for the longest time, I was reading manga, but in my head, I was like, oh, this doesn't count because it's called manga. It's not comics. So I've basically been like trying to go back to my roots and not only like reread a lot of stuff I read growing up, but also new things. Like one book I really liked recently was called I Want to Be a Wall, which is a very funny title, but it's about this girl who loves like boys love manga, where like two guys get together. But she herself has no interest in like romance. And she actually ends up marrying this guy who has a crush on his childhood best friend, but knows he'll never get with him. So it's basically like them faking being a couple, but also like making this really like lovely friendship. And it's also probably like one of the best, most recent, like asexual representations I've seen in stories. So not only is it like very touching, but it's also like very funny and the art is gorgeous. I mean, like I'm a cartoonist. I'm a sucker for the gorgeous art. So, that, and then another manga recommendation I would have is Frieren, I think is how it's pronounced. It's spelled F-R-I-E-R-E-N, which is about this elf girl who, was with an adventuring party for like many years, but because she's an elf, she ages differently than like the rest of her party. So she basically watches like them all die off and is like, okay, I should probably learn how to appreciate humans more. So it's a very sweet story. And I think they're about to hit like volume 7. That was like my big series of 2022. Like it was a story that when I was done with it, like I kept thinking about it. And it's also, you know, gorgeous art. That's always what's most important to me, because it's one of those like more rereadability type of things.
And it seems like you got in kind of at the beginning. Manga can very much be like you find out about a new title. And there are 60 volumes already. Yep. Strap in.
It's funny because I remember when My Hero Academia came out, and like that's a huge thing now. It's in like the 30s with the volumes. But like when I first started reading it, it was just volume 1. And I think that was also before the anime, like not to be like, I was there from the ground up. But I
liked My Hero Academia before.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah. So it's always really funny when like you just discover it on a whim and then all of a sudden it's like everywhere. And then also it reaches a point where like you're not caught up, but everybody else is. And it's like, but I started with it and now I'm falling behind. But I got lucky because Frieren was in my local library, which is honestly where I find like a lot of like manga recommendations that I wouldn't really pick up and buy automatically. So I'm always very appreciative when libraries are like stocked on that stuff, because I think that's also where I got a lot of my comics growing up. like in high school, especially. Like I grew up in Franklin, Massachusetts, which I always say, you know, home of the nation's first public library. And I'm just like always very proud of that little spot because there was just like a whole, there's a small wall of graphic novels, but that's where I lived basically throughout school. And I found like a lot of titles that I wouldn't really have thought to look for otherwise.
Yep, we try our best because we know that there are kids that that's where they're going to go, where they're going to stay. And so, yeah, we want to make sure that we have things for them.
Yeah. I actually work part-time at a library, like, in the last year. And one of the things that is, like, most touching to me is, like, there are some kids who will come over straight after school, like, waiting for a parent to pick them up. And they'll go, like, straight to the manga section. And I just remember when I was a kid, like, that was not a thing. Not only was that not a thing, but, like, you could barely find other people, like, looking at the manga. So the fact that it's, like, so much more... I don't want to say normalized because I don't really think there was too much of a stigma with it, but it's like how it's just so much more common. It's like it warms my heart.
So to continue on our comic graphic novel recommendations, because I also read a ton of graphic novels in general. I love a graphic memoir. So I finished Victory Stand, Raising My Fist for Justice. So that was a graphic memoir. There were some other offers on it, but it's about Tommy Smith, who was a track star in the late 60s, like right during the civil rights movement. His family were sharecroppers and they left Texas on a bus with a ton of other sharecropping families to go to the West Coast in the hopes to find more opportunities for themselves there. And it talks about his life kind of leading up to the pivotal moment, which is that he did a demonstration during the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. Him and one other runner who was also on the podium with him during the national anthem, they raised their fists into the air to protest the state of Black Americans. And there was a ton of pushback from that. Like it basically like it ruined his running career. They were not allowed to compete in the rest of the Olympics. The Olympic Committee told them to basically pack their bags and like leave almost immediately. Yeah. They were like, leave the Olympic Village. You cannot compete anymore. And kind of bounced around doing other things. Finished his college degree, went on later to get a graduate degree, and I believe he's a doctor now, and kind of also showed that like all these years later that now people want him to talk and, you know, to like speak about racial justice. So it was kind of interesting that it was like right out after it happened, the fallout seemed to like really change the direction of his life. But then like in his recent years, talking about like that people are reaching out to him now, that, you know, they see him as a hero and inspiration. So I thought that that was very interesting. And it was funny because they even at the end of the book, they did mention Colin Kaepernick.
I was just going to say, yeah, like the whole time you were talking about that, I was like, this sounds so almost eerily exact to like Colin Kaepernick's story. It's still happening. And that's insane.
But even the interesting part that like, the fallout right after being negative both times.
Yeah.
And like to think about, you know, maybe, you know, like 30 years in the future from now, will people be turning around and being like, Colin Kaepernick was an example to Black athletes?
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's.
And they'll
it's,
be like, I supported him the whole time.
Yeah.
We don't know.
So. It was interesting to see how much had changed, but it was also interesting to see all the parallels and how much his story was very similar to what happened to Colin Kaepernick, and even like the fact that you protest racial justice and like it ruins your sports career.
Yeah.
So it was.
And I guess in like Colin's case, kind of like shifts his career entirely, because I feel like a lot of times when I see him nowadays, it's more like still on that like protesting subject or like some sort of offset of like originally what happened. So it's weird how just like one choice or one like attempt will just completely shift everything that you were originally doing.
So moving right along, have you been watching anything interesting lately?
Yeah, I've watched a lot of Abbott Elementary, which is very funny. And also just really appreciate the spotlight on teachers. not only like the crazy stuff kids will do, but also like the hard. I never like think of school as a business, but like sometimes when they're like not funding you properly, you very much have to be thinking about the business part. So a lot of Abbott Elementary for like the goofs and the giggles. And then one series that I've actually been watching with my parents a lot is Mythic Quest, which I think is like an Apple TV original. But it's kind of like if Blizzard, which is, for those who don't know, that sort of video game company that oversees a lot of games, like, I want to say Overwatch. I'm not 100% sure, to be honest.
Overwatch, World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Is one of their big ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like if Blizzard was like a Parks and Rec like type of show. And so it's the insanity of running like a video game company, and also the big wig who I think is, oh gosh, I forget his name, but he was in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But he's like throwing out all these ideas, and all the artists are like, okay, but you actually have to give us time to make this stuff. Or like they propose something and he's like, change everything. So it's very funny. It's also very touching at times. They do a lot of backstory parts that I really appreciate, or like they'll just do like a complete like episode that has to do with characters that aren't even involved, but like do their choices eventually become relevant like way towards the end of the season. And it's also funny to watch with my parents, because then I have to explain all the video game stuff to them. So it's like, it's great that we can all enjoy it. And also I get to give them weird little internet lessons at the same time.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. You said it's Apple TV, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm never going to pay for Apple TV. Sorry, yeah. Apple TV. I don't know. I've been thinking about getting a trial just to watch Ted Lasso, but that's a whole nother
thing. Yeah, I've heard Ted Lasso is really good. It's funny, because literally every streaming service I have is just me mooching off my parents, or like they'll be watching something, and I'll be like, oh, okay, maybe I'll come sit with you while you're watching this. So I feel like there's so many options for things lately, like it makes my head spin.
But the idea of the video game company, it just makes me think of, in light of everything that, I don't know if you play Dungeons and Dragons or are familiar at all.
Oh, absolutely,
yes. Yeah, in light of everything that's happening in the creator community around Dungeons and Dragons and some of the decisions that the Wizards of the Coast mm-hmm. and the people on the corporate level have made about the game and the legality of making things within their IP, the in and outs of that kind of company that has such a fan base, but then also is making like decisions that are like completely out of touch with the fan base.
Yeah.
Seems timely.
Yes. And it's funny that because there is a character in Mythic Quest who I think is the community manager. So she's basically the one who like gets all the messages from like the angry fanboys. Like, I can't believe you implemented this in the game. But she's like this very like Southwestern, like very cheery, almost like Minnesota talking like woman. She's like, oh yeah, I always get yelled at. It's very interesting. And then there are times where she'll just like break, where she's like, haha, don't do this. I'm going to get yelled at. I don't want to. So it also is just like talking about all the, I think the elements of a lot of artistic industries where like you don't consider like, not only like the artist side where it's like, okay, but they actually have to do all the work, but also like the business side of it where it's like, oh, all the people who are angry about this thing that to them is just like this side entertainment thing, but to us is our job and is like giving us so much stress. It's very interesting not only to see it, but also see it presented in such a funny way, because I have friends who do community management. And they were saying like, oh yeah, we passed around that clip a lot, like in our Slack channel. So it's like commiserating, which is very funny in that regard.
Yeah, because I've been seeing people on Twitter being like, don't yell at Wizards of the Coast social mm-hmm. media manager. Like, it's not their fault what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, they are not their legal team. And the people who came up with this document, they're just like running their social media, and the same with Critical Role, which is huge content creator in that space. And people were like, why didn't they make a better statement? It was like, because they have NDAs.
Yeah, like, it's like a legal thing.
Livelihood is based on this thing. But yeah, so people being basically like, don't yell at the wrong people. It mm-hmm. it makes you a garbage person.
Yeah. And I see that like with animation a lot too, or like people will be so mad with the writing or anything. And it's like, okay, but the artist did an amazing job and they're getting yelled at for parts they have no control over. And meanwhile, their part of what was done is usually like gorgeous or stellar. So it always, it's hard to see. And I think it's very different for me as like a graphic novelist, because a lot of what I do is either just me and the writer, or like the tiny edits made, or just me entirely. So like, if something's wrong, like I'll take the whole fault of it, but I cannot imagine like being yelled at for something that I was like, I agree with you, this part, not great, but legally I had nothing to do with it.
Well, I hope people aren't yelling at you, because your book is great. So
I have not been yelled at yet. I hopefully will not be.
Good. Don't yell at Alex, everyone listening. It's a really good thing to do. Kind of gonna go in a little bit to what we talk about later, since your book is all about improv, but I've been watching a lot of Dropout TV, which is College Humor's streaming service, and I discovered that they made a show. Like, a lot of people hear about their D&D shows and like some of their bigger shows, but when you actually have Dropout, you see all these kind of like shorter, smaller shows that they're making. And they made one called Play It By Ear.
Yes, Play It By Ear is insanely good.
So it is a improv musical where basically like 4 to 5 cast members, guided by the host, do a whole musical completely improv. I am blown away by their skills. And I know you talk a little bit about in the book that you have done some musical improv. So I guess there are ways to practice and get better at it.
Yeah.
But I remember watching and just being like, this was like a musical, like a musical that lasted like an hour. But I was like, that was like a regular musical. There was like very little of it that I would have been like, oh, you know, if I were to make this a musical, I would have threw that out. Like, they just do, they're just so, it's so well, and it kind of like makes fun of some of the musical tropes sometimes.
Yeah, like they clearly know like their base information, or like the foundation of musicals, in order to like riff off it, which is so cool. And I think it's funny, because even though I have been in like aspects of musical improv, I will always be someone who like sits in the audience, or is like with Dropout's case, like watching my screen, and I'm just like incredibly impressed. Like, it doesn't matter that I have attempted it before or like know how it's done. I'm just like, how do people pull this out of themselves? Like, it's something I wish I was better at. Like, it's just such an interesting and like awe-inspiring like skill, basically.
For sure. There was part of me that was like, I would love to go to a party that was like this theme. Like the party, like the whole party is just like make a musical.
Yes.
Improv. But yeah, I don't know if I would want to do it like on stage for other people, because that does seem like a lot of pressure. They also, in one of their other shows called Game Changer, where it's a game show where the game is different every week, they did one that was karaoke night, and they were all improvised songs, like in the style of different artists. And I was blown away with, one, how good of a singer all three of them were. Like, they were just great performances off, like, to start. And then, like, how well they emulated other people's styles and came up with lyrics for a whole song off the top of their head. So this is, I mean, Play It By Ear and that episode both, I was like, how do you come up with the lyrics just like off the top of your head?
That was also something that always like impressed me about Whose Line Is It Anyway, because Wayne Brady was always the one who had like the musical like challenges. Just the fact that he knew all the artists they were saying, like, oh, emulate this person. Like, my fear would be like, you would go to something and they'd be like, oh, emulate so-and-so. And I'd be like, I have never heard their music before. I do not even know what to base this off of. So you have to have like an encyclopedic knowledge on top of that ability to just sort of like throw everything to the side and just be like, okay, I'll just trust my mouth, basically.
Just trust whatever the comes process.
Out. Yeah, exactly.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break. Do you enjoy knitting or crocheting? Join us at the Auburn Branch every Monday at 2 p.m. for their Knitting and Crochet Circle. Work on a project, get help with something new, or knit for a charity cause. Knitters and crocheters of all levels of experience are invited to join. No registration required. For questions, email auburn@cranstonlibrary.org. Enjoy the latest movies, music, ebooks, and audiobooks instantly with Hoopla. Cranston Public Library cardholders can borrow up to 5 instant titles each month with no wait times or holds. You can download the free Hoopla digital mobile app on your Android or iOS device or visit www.hoopladigital.com to begin enjoying thousands of titles from major Hollywood studios, record companies, and publishers available to borrow for instant streaming or temporary downloading to your smartphone, tablet, and computer. But yeah, so I guess, like I said, I guess that leads us kind of right into talking about your book. You talking about Whose Line Is It Anyway reminded me that I related to that a lot. The beginning of the graphic novel, you talked about watching Whose Line Is It Anyway as a kid. And me and my mom would watch Whose Line Is It Anyway. It would come on at repeats, like, kind of in the primetime slot, I remember. Yeah. And so, like, on like a weekday night, maybe. But so I remember watching a lot of repeats of Whose Line Is It Anyway with my mom and just cracking up and it just being like, yeah. And when I was younger, it was kind of like, okay, the jokes that you don't get, like, go over your head and we just don't even need to address that. And yeah. Then as I got older, then I was like, okay. But yeah, so I really related to, and I think, I don't know if Whose Line Is It Anyway was the reason I became a theater kid, but I feel like it definitely was like floating around in there when I got interested in theater. Idea
in your head of like, oh, yeah, this is a thing, like you can do this, just this even.
Yeah. But so, okay, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves. I'm sorry, audience. I just was very excited about this book and getting a chance to talk to Alex about it. But let's take a step back a little bit and talk for people who haven't read your book. What is it about?
So Improve is about how I have had social anxiety for like since a very young age. And I give a lot of examples of that, of how it's more than just sort of like being shy or nervous. It's a lot of like overthinking and keeping myself out of a lot of situations just so I don't have to deal with like rejection or the thoughts that are just very overwhelming. And that could even be something in terms of like, oh God, did I say this person's name right? And like that just taints like the whole conversation for the rest of the night or whatever. And then like being thrust into a lot of more like front presenting aspects in college where I was like running a club, I was in student government. I was not used to being the face of something. And then sort of the downfall of that, like the how that had an effect on me, and also graduating and dealing with sort of like the loneliness after college of I'm in this town that I did not grow up in. I don't really have anyone I can like rekindle friendships with. Just like a very big loneliness aspect. And then I got lucky because where I live, there's the Contemporary Theater Company and they have improv classes. And as Taylor was saying, like, I had watched a lot of Whose Line Is It Anyway growing up. And then I also had a friend in college who was like very into improv. So, and I also had therapists say like, oh, it's kind of like exposure therapy for like some patients. So I was like, okay, I'll finally give it a shot. And it's funny you mentioned D&D because one of the reasons that isn't like super dwelled upon in the book, but one of the reasons I also jumped into it was because I was like, oh, maybe this will help me like with D&D. Or I could just like, especially because I want to be a bard, maybe I can practice musical improv. So that was like, it was one of the many reasons why I decided to do it. But it's basically, the whole book boils down to doing improv and just finding out stuff about how we act as a society, and how the main thing about improv is it's really just like not censoring yourself and all these things that we sort of have ingrained in us over time that we didn't really realize. One of the reasons I made the book was because as I was learning this, I kept telling people about it. Like, I would not shut up about it. I was like, oh, it's so interesting, like, reflecting on this. And then I just got to a point where I was like, maybe I should just write this all down instead of bugging everybody. So it's sort of like how you can use improv in your everyday to help you with social anxiety, but also just in general. And it's also just a new way of looking at the world, too, I think.
There were a lot, I mean, there were a lot of things that I appreciated about it. I appreciated your depiction of anxiety with kind of like the dark clouds with all the voices around you. That felt very evocative and very relatable to me as someone else with the generalized anxiety disorder diagnosis and someone who's been working through that. I also love that you included all the details about the games. Like, it wasn't just about your experience going and like your personal aspect. Like, you also kind of explained like what improv is and what it involves. Was there like a particular reason for that choice, or was that just like what you wanted to draw and include?
There are kind of a few reasons for it. One of it was, like, when I was trying to describe what I was learning, it was kind of hard to mention my takeaway without sort of also explaining, like, what the heck we were doing that made me come to that realization. But I was also just figuring, like, I got very lucky in that there was a community theater near me. Not everybody has that instance. So, like, if somebody, say, wanted to make an improv group, like, they could just gather a bunch of friends or like a bunch of strangers even, and try like what was not only described in the book, but also I talk about Keith Johnson's improv book a lot. So like they have another reference to go look at basically. And I had done this book coming off of like Science Comics, The Brain, and History Comics, The Great Chicago Fire. So I was already doing like a bunch of sort of educational stuff that included like guides and diagrams. So I just thought it was like a way for people to sort of have that opportunity to try it themselves if they really wanted to.
And yeah, you talked about the book that was kind of the foundation of the class that you took. I thought that was really interesting because as someone who improv for me as a kid who did theater in middle and high school was like kind of like, you know, how we'd warm up, how we'd get to know each other. Mm-hmm. How we kind of started to like loosen up and get comfortable being on stage. But I always was really self-conscious about it. I thought I was really bad at it. I mean, I don't know. Jury's still out on it. I think I was. but again, that also might have been my dark anxiety cloud that was like, why did you say that and do that? And you ruined it. Whereas that might not have actually been the case. So yeah, to kind of hear that there is like more to learn than just kind of like the games, that there's kind of like a real foundation to the art was really interesting. That kind of made me want to take an improv class just in the sense of like to learn more about, like, I guess I could just read that book, but to learn more about kind of like the foundational like teachings of it and behind it.
And I think that's also like a very big thing is you can read about it like as much as you want, but until you actually do it, I feel like you don't sort of get that same lesson. Because one of the big things I learned from improv is that the more you do it, the less concerned you get. Because I remember the first few classes I took, like every scene I would do, I'd be like, God, that was terrible. I'd go home and I'd lay in bed and I'd just think about it all the time. But when you're doing it like every week for, I don't know, like 2 years, it's like, oh, that was just another one I did bad at. The next one will be whatever. Like the more you do it, the like less impact it has, basically, because you're just essentially erasing the slate and going forward to the next time. And I definitely feel like because of the pandemic, I haven't like done a ton of improv in the last year or so. Now when I do it, I feel like a lot more nervous and I'm like overthinking it. And that's because like I haven't done it in a while. So I'm not as used to it. And it's the same with like making mistakes. Improv is basically just practicing making mistakes, which I think is great for real life. Because if you're nervous about talking with somebody, it's like, oh, like if you mess up, you just whatever, you'll have another conversation. It's fine. But you don't learn that until you actually do it.
Yeah, the kind of thing of like you can't get caught up in one scene because there's always going to be other scenes.
Yeah. And honestly, the ones that you remember are the good ones. You can do like so many and you'll just forget about some. And it's funny because with the ones I did in the book, I had a lot of friends come up after who are featured in the book. And they're like, I totally forgot about that scene. Like, and I'll be like, I have a weird, like both a steel trap memory, but also like I wrote down a lot of stuff after these like classes because at first, I thought I was just going to do like a super tiny comic. Like, I love doing diary comics. So it's just like, oh, this is what happened to me today. Here's like a silly moment that I thought was interesting. So when I was originally writing stuff down, that's what I was expecting it to be. And then then I was like, oh, but I also have to sort of give background about my history with social anxiety and all that. So it just became like way bigger than I was expecting it to. But because of that, like I was writing down a lot of things that happened and a lot of tiny scenes that most people had already forgotten of, there was one scene in there that I think is, it's included in the way back of the book. That's more like a bonus game. But there was one scene that I had a lot of people like, thank God you included that, because that was one of my favorite scenes we've ever done. It was actually a musical improv scene where me and the character in the book, Becca, she and I were doing a story about, oh, we're goblins under the stairs of this like house and we have to come out and like get stuff every now and then. And she said, like, Marty, I love you like a brother. And my brain short-circuited and I said, I love you like a lover. And everyone was just like, what? And they're like, okay, well, now you have to sing about it. And I was like, oh, God. But, like, every time I go to the theater now, everyone's always like, I love you like a lover. And it's like, so it's really nice to have a place to, like, sort of immortalize those moments. Because a lot of times improv is very much like a, oh, you had to be there type of situation, but comics are like my way of being like, hey, everyone else can be in on the joke now too, especially this one, because we, oh God, do we mention it a lot.
I also appreciated that you talked about the group that you did improv with, and you were saying that it was different than what you expected. You were expecting maybe for there to be a lot of people around your age, and it turned out that there was kind of a lot of people of a lot of different ages and in different stages of life, which I think happens with a lot of community-based groups, because I, over the past probably close to 2 years now, started taking dance classes at like a nonprofit dance studio. So it kind of does have this like community kind of feel to it. And I was surprised with that a lot of people were like older than me. I kind of did it because I was hoping to, you know, maybe make some more connections and make friends and things like that. And they were lovely and we had a great time. The group we had for, I took a hula class specifically, and it was me and three other ladies. And so it was like a nice, like intimate class. And so we had a blast, but it was surprising to me because I was like, oh, okay. I thought this was going to be other.
Yeah.
Millennials looking for friends.
I always joke that I came out of these improv classes with five extra parents. Because everyone was older than me, but like I talked to them more regularly, I think, than the people at the theater who are my age. But because of that big age difference, like they're always like, oh, like we miss you. Like we like, and they're like, they basically treat me like an extra kid of theirs, which is very funny to me.
I don't want to generalize, but I think older people kind of like the idea of like taking someone under their wing. Cause I feel like I even do it. Like we have two part-timers who work here who are in college right now. And I feel like I try not to do it too much and sound like a cratchety grandma, but like sometimes I'll just have to be like, I remember when I was your age and everything is going to be okay. You know, like you kind of want to impart that wisdom on like this reaction to wanting to like impart wisdom on the next generation to be like, go out, do better than I did.
I know. And sometimes it's just like, you're not even thinking of it. Cause I know for me, there's one improv class I took where we had like this 14-year-old in the group. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to try and see if I can be buddy buddy with them. Cause you know, it wasn't too long ago I was in high school. And then I think at the time I was 24 and I had the realization where I was like, oh my God, I am 10 years older than this child. Cause like for me, I'm just thinking of like, oh, like I know sometimes it can be weird being around like a bunch of people who are older than you. And you want to sort of connect with the person who's like closest in age to you. And in my head, I was like, oh, I'm closest in age.
That's me.
Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, right. I forgot that I'm getting older. So it's both like, I think, instinctual, but also, I don't know, maybe it's you being like, I remember when I was like that. I just forgot. That was so long ago now. I thought it was last year.
Yeah. I definitely have some like, oh, sweet summer child moments.
Yeah. Yeah, so I definitely feel that both in improv and also just like now at like comic events, like I remember going there and being like the youngest for the longest time. And now there are people younger than me. And I'm like, this is new. I'm not used to this.
Who are people younger than you who are comic creators?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think I started talking with more like industry professionals and like going to conventions when I was probably like 20, 21. A lot of the people I were talking to were like in their 30s or even 40s. And they were super sweet to me and they took me under their wing and they were like, this is how we do this, or, oh, do you want to come to this with us? And so I definitely try and pass that along with a lot of stuff now, but it's definitely very jarring, I think, in the sense, because I remember being the youngest for so long and now someone comes along and I'm like, oh, there were people born after the year 2000. I forgot that's a thing.
Oh, yeah, I have that moment making library cards. I'll make library cards and I will type in like the year 2016 and that child will be like,
yes,
a person that reads on their own and can be like left on their own for like fairly sizable amounts of time. And I'm just like, 2016 was 4 years ago. Stop. But it wasn't.
I know. 2016 was when I graduated from college and I was like,
same.
6-7 years ago. It feels like it was like 4 months ago. I don't know. Time is so weird when you get older.
Yeah, it's wild.
And I've also come to realize that's because I remember when like an hour felt like eternity when I was in elementary school. And that's because it was like, I don't know, like a bigger fraction of the time I had been alive. And now for me, an hour is like, oh, that's like a minute now.
Yeah, I'll look at the clock and I'll be like, oh, it's almost time to go home. All right, so we end the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or a bookish related question. So I thought this week I'd keep it a little more on theme. We talked about a big part of your book is the different improv games that are included. So I was just curious what your favorite game is.
Oh, my favorite. That's a good question. I definitely already mentioned that musical improv one with our goblin scene. I really like that one, specifically called Tony Winning Moment. Because the whole idea is, like, you're watching a show that was just nominated for all the Tonys, and, like everyone got an award, like, Best Supporting Actress and all that. So, basically, everybody gets a chance, like, to be in the spotlight, which I think is very nice, because sometimes you'll have a scene where one person is sort of, like, taking the lead, and sometimes that's what the story needs, so, like, it's fine. But this is a game where it's kind of like, hey, we're all stars here, like, and I think that's very sweet as someone who tends to sort of take on like a lot of supporting roles, I think, in scenes where I'm like, oh, I'll help out with this instead of being in the front because I want to uplift this person. But this is a game where it's like, no, we all deserve to be uplifted. And I think that's really nice. And it's not a game that I play too often, but I think when we do, like, it's very nerve-wracking, I think, in the moment. But afterward, like, I very much appreciate it because it's like, yeah, I feel like this is something we all deserve. We all deserve to have a little bit of time in the spotlight.
That's lovely. All right. So before we wrap up, if people want to find out more about your book, other comics that you've made, where can they find that on the internet?
My portfolio site is tooniart.com. That's TOONYART. Or I'm usually on most social media as at Toonie Balloony. So same Toonie spelling, and then it's just balloon with a Y. And these are usernames I've had for over 10 years, which is why it is not my name. But yeah, I'm usually posting little bits and bobs every now and then.
Fantastic. And we will include a link to your book. We will include in a link to your site and maybe some of your social medias. We do have a character limit down in the show notes. So if people want to find you, they can find that down there. So thank you everyone for listening. If you would like to weigh in on our last chapter question, if you play improv games, I guess, or send us an idea for another last chapter question, you can email us at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. And you can reach out to us via social media with the hashtag downtimeCPL. If you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. And this has been another episode of Downtime. Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Nomi Haig, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza. and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime. It just... No, sorry.
It's okay. That's what editing is for.
Yes. Oh, seems like it was probably for me. I'll figure that out later.